Guys, I thought we'll talk about facing death. No, joking, sorry. Joke. But no, we're gonna talk about facing death, not because I'm married, but because it kind of was on my heart and my mind during this week. So before we do that, let's watch a video called the second one, the Wind Storm. Yeah, that one. So watch this and see what you think.
I know your story. I've read it cover to cover. And I know the storms that will come. The waves will swell and the sky will darken. Though you'll fight against the current, you'll be swept away. You'll feel helpless and abandoned. And you'll wonder where I am in the midst of it all. I know this isn't the way you thought our relationship would work. But my plans are not for my comfort or yours. My purposes are always and only an expression of love. The scars on my hands are proof that love will sometimes lead you directly into the storm. Though you can't understand my plans, you can trust in one thing, that I am entirely good. You can't even imagine how good I am, and my plan for you is no different. When you shout asking where I am, know that I am right behind you, with my arms wrapped tightly around you, whispering, I will never let go. For you are the pinnacle of my creation and the center of my affection. There will come a day when I will quiet every storm and wipe away every tear. In that day, there will be no more pain or death. But until that day comes, I will be your anchor in this storm.
So, we're going to look at three kings. Three kings who faced a storm, who faced death. We're going to see how they each approached the storms that they were in and the death that they faced. So, you ready? Ready to look at them? Okay. The first king that we're looking at, and this is going to be found in the book of 2 Kings, chapter 20, is Hezekiah. Who knows who Hezekiah is? Alright, I guess to begin with, before we talk about Hezekiah, I'll give you a bit of a lead into why I've been thinking about death a little bit this week. Not because I'm married, but because there is a patient, or a couple of patients of mine, who I've just diagnosed with cancer these past couple of weeks. Both of them very big surprises, both of them very advanced cancer. Both of them will most likely die as a result of what we found. And I broke the news to both of these patients. I'll tell you what, it was both of them, each day that I broke the news to them, they were days that I was dreading. They were days that I didn't look forward to at all, but they were also days that I felt extremely nervous about. And when you sit there opposite someone and you know you've got bad news to tell them, I wonder what you guys would be like if you were in that position. And then obviously, you know, what is it like to actually receive that news? What is it like to be told that, you know, you've got the big cancer, the thing that everyone's afraid of? So breaking that news, do you know what surprised me the most when I broke the news to each of those people? Is literally how well they took it, how gracious they were when they took it. But also, you could see the fear in their eyes. You could see them change. You can see how much it really affected them. But they took it with grace. So we're going to look at these three kings, these three people who faced death, who were in the middle of a huge storm, and see what they did, see how they responded. So the first one's Hezekiah. Hezekiah, you actually have heard of him before, because I was here when Shadi preached about him a few weeks ago. Or months ago now, I guess. And Hezekiah was a great king of Israel, well, Judah, fantastic king. He was born to a horrible king, King Ahaz. His dad was a really bad guy, and he turned the people of Judah away from God. He set up all these horrible temples and idols and places of worship for demonic gods, and put God down. Then Hezekiah was born, he took the throne, and Hezekiah did huge reforms. Hezekiah broke down all the places of worship to these idols and these demonic gods, and he put God up again. He opened the doors of the temple again. It was nailed shut by his father. He opened those doors open again, and he reinstated the priests of Judah, and he reinstated the Passover feast, and he just did fantastic things. God was so pleased with him. He was so happy with him. Then, during his kingdom, the Assyrians, they were the big bad enemies of Israel and Judah at the time, and they came to oppose Judah. And this is what Shadi preached about the other time, where Hezekiah, the king of Assyria, he gives him this letter saying, "You think your God is going to save us, save you from us? We're going to destroy you. Your God is nothing. We're going to pound him down just like we pounded all the other foreign gods of the other foreign nations," and blah, blah, blah. And Hezekiah grabs this letter that the king of Assyria writes to him. He lays it down in front of the altar of God, and he says, "God, look at what this guy is saying about you. Vindicate yourself. Rise up. Prove that you're the real God. We trust in you. We hope in you." And the prophet Isaiah, who was the prophet at the time, who was very close friends with King Hezekiah, he came up and he said, "God's heard what the king has said, and he's heard what you've prayed, and he's going to give you a great victory." And that's when God literally kills 180 or something thousand people of the enemy camp while they're about to attack. And it's just this insane victory, and the rest of them run away. And Hezekiah is, you know, involved in this miraculous victory. So Hezekiah was a great king. He was a great man. He saw God's power firsthand. He loved God. He followed God. He knew God. And then this happens in 2 Kings chapter 20, beginning from verse 1. It says this: "In those days, Hezekiah became ill and was at the point of death. The prophet Isaiah, son of Amos, went to him and said, 'This is what the Lord says. Put your house in order, because you're going to die. You will not recover.'" Bombshell. The bad news hits him. Hits him very bluntly, in fact. God just straight up says through Isaiah, "You're going to die. This illness that you're facing right now, you're not going to get better from it. Full stop." Bad news. How do you think Hezekiah felt? We're going to find out. But hey, if that was you, you were this incredible leader of God's people. God loved you. God demonstrated his power and all this awesomeness, and then you got stuck with this news. What would you feel? Anyone, honestly, if you want. I don't know what Shady's been doing to you all, but you can speak if you want. I'm joking, I know you've never spoken to me. I'll tell you what, how about this, let's flip it on the other side. How do you reckon God felt? Because, I don't know about you, but when I read this, I actually think of God's goodness. When I read this, when I read that God chose to go and use his prophet and talk to the king that was faithful to him and said, "You're going to die, set your house in order," God was actually giving an opportunity to this man that he loved and who did very wonderful things for him, and because they were in relationship together, and he was saying, "This is me telling you, you're about to come home. Do what you want, do what you can before we meet each other." That's the way I view it. Does anyone else feel the same way? Am I just weird? But anyway, this is how Hezekiah responded in verse 2. Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed to the Lord, "Remember, Lord, how I have walked before you faithfully and with wholehearted devotion and have done what is good in your eyes." And Hezekiah wept bitterly. Hezekiah knew he was going to die, knew that his illness was going to end in his death, and he pleaded for his life. He was afraid. He was afraid of death, which is fair enough. That's not a sin. That's not a bad thing to feel, not a bad thing to do, but he was afraid. What do you guys feel about that when we hear about it? Like, is what kind of emotions does that bring up in you? Or what do you, how do you feel about Hezekiah knowing he acted that way? Because I'm sure some of us would respond exactly the same way. I'm sure some of us who want to pretend to be holier than the rest of us will probably be like, dude, this guy, he should have been happy that he was going to go see God. He should have been happy that God gave him a warning. But look, that's how he responded. Let's read on in verse 4. Before Isaiah had left the middle court, so literally he went in, he told Hezekiah, you're going to die, and then he walks out. And before he leaves the middle court, the word of the Lord came to him. Go back and tell Hezekiah, the ruler of my people, this is what the Lord, the God of your father David, says. I have heard your prayer and seen your tears. I will heal you. What do you think about that? Do you know what that makes me think of, like, as soon as I read that? God loved Hezekiah very much. God loved him very much. That he brought this bad news to him in the first place. And then, as soon as Hezekiah was upset by it, God, before even a day had passed, said, all right, okay, fine. That's okay. You're okay. You'll be fine. And then, the rest of the story goes that Hezekiah does get healed. And then we're going to skip forwards to verse 12. You ready? Listen to this. So now Hezekiah has been extended 15 years onto his life. God says, you will now get 15 years extra. And he proves to him that that's going to happen. And Hezekiah's like, great. And then verse 12 happens. At that time, Marduk Baladan, son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent Hezekiah letters and a gift because he had heard of Hezekiah's illness. Hezekiah received the envoys and showed them all what was in his storehouses, the silver, the gold, the spices, and the fine olive oil, his armory and everything found among his treasures. There was nothing in his palace or in all his kingdom that Hezekiah did not show them. Then Isaiah the prophet went to King Hezekiah and asked, what did those men say and where did they come from? From a distant land, Hezekiah replied. They came from Babylon. The prophet asked, what did they see in your palace? They saw everything in my palace, Hezekiah said. There is nothing among my treasures that I did not show them. Hezekiah goes from being this close to death, knowing that he's going to die. Then God says, once he kicks up a fuss about it, God says, no worries, you got 15 more years. You'd think that you'd want to use them well. You'd think that you'd be humbled by that experience. You'd think that you would turn back to God and just give unending thanks, unending praise, unending devotion, just like he had lived the rest of his life, right? But what does he do instead? Instead, these foreign kings and foreign rulers come to his land, enemies of Israel, enemies of Judah. They come to his land, and what does he do? He shows off. Hey, come on, yeah, have a look at my palace and look at all this stuff and look at... And he's showing them everything and he's got pride. This is the first time we see in Hezekiah's life pride. This is the first time where instead of seeking God and instead of seeking what God might want to do, he just goes around and he puffs out his chest and is like, look at everything I've got. And this is what happens as a result of it. Verse 16, then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord. The time will surely come when everything in your palace and all that your predecessors have stored up until this day will be carried off to Babylon. Nothing will be left, says the Lord. And some of your descendants, your own flesh and blood, who will be born to you, will be taken away, and they will become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. The word of the Lord you have spoken is good, Hezekiah said. For he thought, will there not be peace and security in my lifetime? How messed up is that? If you missed what just happened, Hezekiah just showed, you know, pride and showed everything off. God punishes him then and says, everything that you've shown off and all the pride that you have, I'm going to take this all away from you. This will not belong to you and your ancestors. And Hezekiah, the man who would have went back to God and would have asked for forgiveness, or who would have, you know, gone back to him and said, please, Lord, and all that kind of stuff. Hezekiah decided to say, great, that's fantastic. Why? Because it's not going to happen while I'm alive. It's going to happen to my kids. It's going to happen to the future of your people, God. This is the king, the ruler of God's people. And he's like, yep, no worries. And then we find out the very end of this story, verse 21. Hezekiah rested with his ancestors, and Manasseh, his son, succeeded him as king. Now, a little bit of a footnote for you, for those of you who are interested in the Old Testament and theology. Manasseh, Hezekiah's son, who was born to him in those extra 15 years that God gave Hezekiah, Manasseh was the worst king that ever lived in all of Judah, that ever reigned in all of Judah. Manasseh, in fact, God despised what Manasseh did so much that even generations after Manasseh had died, God was still angry at Judah and at Israel because of what Manasseh did. He sacrificed, so not only did he break back God and the temple and all the stuff that Hezekiah set up, but he also sacrificed his children to demonic gods. He did just awful, terrible, evil things. And God, this is what happened. Hezekiah faced death. He wanted extra time. God gave it to him out of his love, out of his mercy. And Hezekiah used that time really to screw up everything that he did over his whole kingdom. That's how one king faced death. That's how one king faced a storm. That's how one king faced a hard time. He made a horrible, horrible time out of it. Let's look at another king now. Second king that we're going to look at is David. Does anyone know about David? King David. Can anyone tell me about him? What happened to King David? Sherry smiled at me. What's up with King David?
he was also really great up until he looked at Bathsheba
Sure. Leaning
on the roof. And
sure.
Then he kind of led a life that got her pregnant, killed her husband.
Sure. You're recounting his greatest failures.
Other than that, great.
Yeah. So Sherry is a half glass empty type of person. Anyone tell me the half glass full? What happened? Let's talk about David's early days. Tell me what he was like before he was king. And then what happened to lead to him becoming king. Anyone? Stevos, please.
He was a shepherd.
Yes, he was a shepherd. What else?
He was the youngest of his brothers.
He was.
And when he was anointed, I think it was Samuel.
Oh, sorry.
He went through all the brothers and picked him as God told him to be.
That's right. David, so first of all, the early part of David's story is epic, like so epic. If you want to read like one of the greatest stories of a king rising to power, like honestly, one incredible. So David, like Steve told us, he was the youngest of his brothers. He was a shepherd boy. He came from a family that honestly didn't think much of him. And then Samuel, so first of all, what was happening at the time, the first king of Israel, Saul, he was not very good. He turned away from God, and God was like, nah, no more of this. We've got to have a new king. And so he went and he found David. And David was so wonderful in God's eyes that after David's life ended, what God said about him was that he was a man after my own heart. He was a man that knew what I was like and actually did what I did to people and lived a life that I really loved. He was a man that was brave, but he was also a man for most of his life that was hunted. His rise to his kingdom was this whole power struggle between him and Saul. Saul hunted him constantly. Every single day of David's life until he became king was literally waiting to be killed by Saul. Saul found out that David was supposed to take his place, and Saul did not like that at all, so he went and hunted David. And we read this in 1 Samuel chapter 23, in verse 14. It says, David stayed in the wilderness strongholds and in the hills of the desert of Ziph. Day after day, Saul searched for him, but God did not give David into his hands. We've got another king here who's facing death, who's in the middle of a storm, who's unsure about what's going to happen to him day to day, whether or not he's going to die. He's living only on the promise that God gives him, which is one day you're going to be king. And this guy writes Psalm 63 literally while he's waiting there in the desert. Let's have a look at Psalm 63, because this will blow your mind. This is what he writes in the middle of his storm. You, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory, because your love is better than life. My lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands. I will be fully satisfied as with the richest of foods. With singing lips my mouth will praise you. On my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night, because you are my help. I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me. Hear this language? This isn't just the language of someone who's like, this guy's great, God's awesome, yeah, and fist pump in the air. This is the language of, honestly, a lover to the one who he loves. This is the language of someone who's deeply and profoundly in love with someone else. This is the language of someone who is so dependent and so needing of that other person, who has literally decided to give all of themselves to this person. This is, you know, look at verse 3 again, because your love is better than life. This is the way that David faced his storm. This is the way that he looked at the situation that he held in his life. I'm about to die, and all I can do is continue to praise you. All I can do is to continue to pour out my love. All I can do is to say that you're better than anything else, and I don't care about what comes my way as long as I have you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So what is the difference then? Before we move on to our third king, what's the difference? We know that Hezekiah was a guy who loved God, who served God, who did all these crazy and great things. We know that David, clearly, was a guy who also loved and served God and eventually did great and crazy things as well. But what's up with these two? What do you reckon the difference is? Thoughts? What are the differences? What do you reckon?
David glorified God no matter what.
Yeah. I think in a nutshell, that's absolutely right. You see, David didn't care about anything else except for God. His eyes were fixed on him the whole time. And what resulted out of that was a mouth and a heart and a mind that completely and continuously poured out praise. Whereas Hezekiah, he looked at his death and he forgot God. In the middle of that fear, in the middle of that sorrow, in the middle of that hard time, he forgot him. All he thought about from then on was my life. And you know how I know that? Because after God gave him 15 more years, he continued in the same pattern. He continued to be proud and focusing on his life, his wealth, his kingdom, to the point where even when God said, because of what you've done, Judah's going to suffer, he said, great, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. And he had a son during those years. Instead of bringing that son up to love God as well, he was like, oh, whatever. And then Manasseh became this awful, awful person that literally God just, like, honestly, you read the language of 2 Kings onwards from Hezekiah's story, God really hated what Manasseh did. Like, really read it. This one man continued to focus on God no matter what. The other man completely got shaken by the scare, completely got shaken by the storm that he was in, and completely started to focus on himself. Self-preservation mode, pride, the pride of life is what the New Testament ends up calling it. And yeah. Now let's have a look at our third king. You see, our third king is different. Our third king is not a guy who was shaken by the situation he was in when he faced death. Our third king was not someone that, you know, like, only focused on God. Well, he did only focus on God, but he did it because of one clear reason, because he knew what was on the other side. You see, David didn't really know what was on the other side. In the Old Testament, they didn't really know about heaven that much. They didn't really know. When God promised them things, he would promise them long life, he would promise them wisdom and wealth, he would promise them a good reputation, he would promise that their families would prosper, he would promise that their children and their children's children will prosper. They didn't really know much about heaven. But you see, a third king, he knew what was on the other side. The first time, he knew what was on the other side. And we read our story in 1 John chapter 4, verse 18. Oh, sorry. We read our story in Matthew chapter 26. And that's where it says this. Whoops. Then he said to them, this is Jesus, our third king, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Our third king, Jesus himself, the King of Kings, he also faced death. He also faced literally the most difficult situation any of us could ever find ourselves in, knowing that you're going to die. And not just that he's going to die, but that he's going to die on a cross. He's going to die in literally the most humiliating and painful death that humanity has ever thought up of. He knew this, and don't miss it. He wasn't happy about it. In fact, he was terrified of it. He was so afraid that he says, "I'm afraid to the point of death." In other parts in the Bible, we find out that he sweated so much that it was like tears of, or sweat of blood, beads of blood. He was in agony by what he knew he was about to go through. And yet, what does he pray? He prays, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup be taken from me, but not as I will, but as you will." See, Jesus was not interested in necessarily not dying. Unlike Hezekiah. Hezekiah was like, "I do not want to die at all costs. Please, just don't let it pass from me." And Jesus also wasn't like David, where he's like, "Look, all I want is just you, God." Although Jesus, you know, him and the Father are one. You can't have a closer relationship to God the Father, to God himself, than being one with him, which is what Jesus was. But he wasn't just concerned about that. He was concerned about the bigger picture. He was concerned about what this would mean. He was concerned about the fact that his death would set us free, that his stripes and his wounds would heal us. He was concerned and worried about what would happen, what would be the outcome, the opposite end of the story. So he wasn't even focusing really on the storm at all. He wasn't really focusing on the situation at all. He was focusing on what would happen when the clouds broke. And it was hard and it was painful, and he knew that the storm would be the hardest thing he would ever face. But he said, "Not as I will, but as you will." So, we have these three kings. They each faced death in a different way. And I wonder which of the kings you guys are. And look, hopefully none of you are facing death right now. But I'm sure you're all facing something. And it might not even necessarily be a hard time. Honestly, your death that you're facing is what God calls death, which is sin. Some of you are facing the spiritual form of death, which is killing very slowly, like a cancer. And that's called sin. Some of you are facing it day by day, and you're looking at it. And some of you are like, "God, God, 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 look, please, 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 just like, let me live, let me live. I, you know, you're not really concerned about anything except for the experience that you're going through at the moment." And when God kind of pats you on the back and says, "Don't worry, I love you, I love you," you turn around, and instead of living your life for him, instead of following him with everything that you are, instead of praising him and going back to him, you're like, "Okay, great, no worries, I'm going to be proud, I'm going to live life the way I want to." Some of you are like David, where you see the sin or the problem that you're in, and you go, "That's okay, it's all good. God is the one I'm focusing on," and you keep trying to strive for him. But really what we should be like is Jesus. We should be people that look to the flip side of this life. I know that you guys have heard about eternity before, and you guys have seen that video of that guy holding the rope, and the like tip of the rope is red, and he's like, that is the time that you're living here on earth, and all the rest of the white stuff, that's eternity, and that's where we should be like that. That's what Jesus was like for us. He knew the eternal consequence of his actions, and we should be living the same way. I mean, honestly, think about this for a second. Do you realize that you're going to live forever if you belong to Christ? You're going to live forever. Do you realize that every single moment here on earth is going to be weighed? And God loves you no matter what, so it's not like he's going to weigh it and he's like, no. Do you realize that the time that you have day to day, that this could be used for so much more? Like, do you know when my grandma passed away? I looked at my life and I was like, what am I doing day to day? What, honestly, what am I doing? How am I using my time? How could I sit here and do this meaningless thing when my grandma's up in heaven and she sees eternity and she's with Jesus and she knows what it's all about and she's looking down on me and going, what the heck? Why is he doing this? What an idiot. I'm sure my grandma didn't say that about me. But on the other side, how could you sit there and sin? How could you sit there and literally build up a wall between you and the one who saved you? How could you sit there and destroy the relationship that literally cost our God his life? How could you sit there and destroy that relationship just because it's what you want to do at the time? How? How are we doing that? Let's have eyes, let's have a mind that's like Christ, that focuses on eternity, that sees God in everything, in every moment, and that says, not my will, but yours. Jesus is the King of Kings. He loved us so much that he chose to face death, and even death on a cross, to set us free from the fear of death and our selfish ways forever. He died. He chose to go into that storm willingly, so that we, when we do go through those storms, whether they be sin, whether they be hard times, whether they be sickness and even death itself, that we would go through them knowing that he went there first, and that we know, just as he knew, what's on the other side. I'm going to show you one more video before we wrap up. And while you're watching it, think about where you stand before God. And let's spend a few moments after the video ends just to be in front of God and figure out what it is. What storm are you going through? What death are you facing? If it's sin, if it's selfish desires, if it's actual problems at school, at uni, if it's health problems, if it's family problems, what storm are you going through? And how are you choosing to face God? And how are you choosing to talk to him in the middle of that storm? So let's watch this video. Thank you.